You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. It's Wednesday. We're doing it over here at your mom's house. I'm your host, Ryan Sickler. You can find me on all social media at Ryan Sickler. Our website is ryansickler.com. I want to say thank you for putting up with me while I've been sick. Man, I've been sick. I know you hear me. You can still hear it in me. This thing's hanging on like in-laws, sticking around, man. I mean, man, I'm hacking up lungs while these people are making me laugh, cry, all of it. So I didn't want to miss. So I apologize, and I appreciate you bearing with me on that. My new album, it's only a couple months old. I don't know when you can stop saying new. It's available now. Get it on iTunes, Apple Music, Amazon, Google Play, Spotify, Pandora. I got some updates from Spotify. You guys are streaming it out there, and I want to thank you all for that. Create a Ryan Sickler channel. Man, it really helps. All that stuff is easy, free stuff. Throwing up a positive review on iTunes, not only for the album, but for this podcast, which you all been doing as well. And I just can't thank you so much. There's been so much positive feedback. You're making me feel like, you know, we're doing a good thing here, and I feel like we are doing a good thing here. We're going to keep on doing that good thing. And I just want to thank you all so much, man. It feels good, you know. Definitely out of my comfort zone, but I've never felt more at home, if that makes any fucking sense to all you honeydews. It probably does. I wanted to tell you some dates I have. Locally, March 2nd, I'm at the Rec Room in Huntington Beach. That is such a great room. That's Hunter Hill's room. He's had some great episodes on the Crab Feast. And that's just a good spot. If you're down in Huntington Beach or that area, that's a great, great club. March 5th, Laugh Factory Hollywood. March 12th, Comedy Store. Phoenix House of Comedy. I will be there April 4th through the 6th. Tickets are available now. I will be in Vegas at the Little Vegas Festival they're throwing at the end of April. That's Jill Kimmel, which is fantastic. I'm very glad she asked me to be a part of that. That's April 26th and 27th. Some June shows with Tommy Buns in Richmond, Maryland, and Atlantic City. And I know it's way off. I heard myself say no. August 1st through 3rd. I'm just saying it now. Tickets aren't available yet, but they will be. House of Comedy in Minnesota. So I'm coming out to Minnesota. And I'm working on Edmonton right now as well, too. And I can't wait to see all of you out there. All you what? I know. I see you keep throwing it around, keep asking. I'll be honest with you. I've thought a lot of them. I've seen a lot of them, you know. And I just feel like, and we're not, you know, I feel like doers. I feel like doers is a positive connotation. It has a good vibe to it. And it's what we all are out here doing. We're not the ones that are balling up like little bitches and curling up and going away. We're getting up every day and walking right through that shit. So I think y'all are doers. D-E-W-E-R-S. You know what I'm saying? If you haven't subscribed to The Honeydew, what the hell are you doing? Damn it. Go subscribe. And thank you for all the pictures too. I'm considering putting an Instagram page together of just some sad ass honeydew pictures, but it's where honeydew can go get the love. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking about that. I'm collecting all of the ones you've been sending. I've been trying to throw them up on Instagram and use them. I can't always tag everybody because I can't always find everybody's name, but I'm going to throw your shit up on an Instagram page if you want. So here's some honeydew information for you. Now, the feed now is all honeydew. Crab Feast, we're gonna put on its own feed, so you'll be able to just get your Crab Feast episodes where you want them, real simple. We'll throw up the links. We'll blast it. You'll find it. It'll be super easy. The website here, thehoneydewpodcast.com. You can go find all the info I'm about to tell you there. Email me, honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. So many of you already have, and I'm trying to get back to all of you. Follow the show on social media. The Honeydew Podcast is our Facebook page. Let's get those numbers up. We're going to start having a lot of stuff coming your way. Twitter at Honeydew Pod. And you know what we're doing over here if you're listening. If you're just new to the show, we're just over here laughing in the face of adversity. That's what the hell we're doing. Looking for that light and the darkness. And my guest this week, this son of a bitch is like the Luxor in the darkness. Ladies and gentlemen, it is an honor and a pleasure to have on the Honeydew, Tim Dillon.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Brother, thank you.
I'm glad I made it to one of the versions of the show. I appreciate
it. You got the offshoot.
I've got the offshoot. I did Jay's. I did yours. If your producer spins out and does something, I'll do his.
Please.
Yeah.
Well, you are welcome here, man. We've been talking off mic, and I can't wait to get into it with you. But before we do, please promote anything you'd like to promote.
Oh, yeah. A podcast, Tim Dillon's Going to Hell, if you like dark stuff, dark humor. So if you listen to this show, you probably do. That's on Gas Digital Network. We have a show that goes up on iTunes for free every Sunday. And TimDillonComedy.com, if you want to check me out live. I'm, you know, all over the country. I'm in L.A. for a little while, based out of New York, but check out that site, and I'm probably doing a weekend, maybe somewhere near you. Come on down. Tim J. Dillon on Instagram, if you like pictures of, food.
Who had you?
What?
Who had Tim? You couldn't get Tim Dillon?
What happened?
You had to go with J. Dillon?
Yeah, no, Tim Dillon's taken. That Tim Dillon is taken. Actually a guy who works at Marvel, and on Twitter, everybody always goes at him and goes, "You're fat, you're gay, praise Allah." Yeah, they go, "Please stop." He's DM'd me. He's like, "Can you control these people?"
No.
I'm like, "Not really. Change your name." Like, he's a respectable guy at Marvel. And some people be like, "Where's the podcast? It should be up already. What's wrong with you? I'm unsubscribing." And he's like, "Dude, I don't even do, but he's kept the name. He's like, now he's he just digs in.
He likes
won't
the abuse.
Change it. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a friend recently say something like that. I'm like, "Do you really think I can control people on the fucking internet? Are you out of your mind? That's the most impossible task."
Right, right.
Well, I wanted to start off, and for those of you who do know Tim, you may know a little of his story. I didn't know this, and I saw this on your Twitter, and I screen grabbed it. I'm going to read what it says.
Yeah, please.
And then we can just fucking get into it, because you're a honeydew through and through, my friend.
These are
quotes. "I'll be honest about my shit. I spent time in crack houses, and I got into drugs. I started doing blow at 13 and was a closet homosexual. My mom is schizophrenic. That's why I'm like this. Now I want to know why everyone else is like that."
Yeah.
Dude,
now
welcome to the honeydew.
That is not for a dating site.
That's not your bio on
Yeah,
Twitter.
That shouldn't. That is not for a resume. And I realize that now. But I put it on the Twitter heading because I like the – see, Twitter, you just get these 140 characters, just bursts. So I want people to kind of get how fucked up I am and, like, where I'm coming from, so that if you read something on my Twitter and you're like, "What is this?" I want you to look at that and be like, oh,
got it.
That guy. Okay, sure,
See, we have something in common slightly, schizophrenia. I have a cousin that is a paranoid schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And I've watched his behavior over the years. I was on Rogan talking about it a little bit and got beat up a little bit because people are like, "Oh, I was with you until you started making fun." I'm like, "I'm not making fun of it."
Yeah.
We're not, and not making light of it. We're finding the humor in the darkness, because when you deal with shit like that for all those years,
yeah,
people don't know what the fuck that's like unless they're in it. And then if you don't find a way to laugh at it, it's just going to fucking kill you.
I make fun of my mother all the time.
To her, about her.
If she was in better health, I'd bring her on stage. She's funnier than most people. She's hilarious. I mean, she's just one of those people who's like, she's crazy. But here's the thing with schizophrenics. They don't have a filter.
No.
You know?
No,
so that's kind
filter.
Of fun with a schizophrenic.
No,
she's
filter.
In a state-run institution. She's no longer auditioning for the world.
Right.
She's got things to say, you know?
So let's go back to the beginning.
Sure.
Where are you from originally?
In Long Island, New York.
All right. And were you brought up in a single-parent home?
What? No, I was brought up in a home with two parents that their combined effort was a single parent. You had each of them. You had a schizophrenic and my dad, who was harboring the dreams of being a musician.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So
what kind of musician?
He had a band, and he would play at the Coyote Grill, at the legendary Coyote Grill in Long Island. And from there, you know, he hoped that he was going to be.
What did he play?
He was a guitar player. He's actually a really talented guy.
Did he sing as well?
He sang. I mean, you know, in the 70s, he had a band that toured around Long Island weddings, you know? That was the
what
move.
What was the name of the band?
Full Circle. Full Circle. They were fucking smart. You know, Full Circle. They were
deep.
Full Circle. And, you know, he's a good-looking dude. He had long hair. My mother and him got married on a beach. She had a puka shell necklace, and he was in a blue tuxedo. You know, they're like,
how'd they meet?
I think she was just a groupie, you know? Okay. And they got married, and they had a lot of fun for like 10 years. They went to Florida. She was a weeky-watchy mermaid in Florida.
What is that?
It's a woman who dresses up like a mermaid and swims around in a tank. In Florida. This was her job. I come from really good stock.
Yeah,
I'm really
proud. Do, man. I mean,
I'm really proud of where I came from. And,
I'm hoping some of your genes just leap off of you right
my
now.
My dad, I kind of like always wanted to fuck a mermaid. And he like told people that. Like he said that to people. That's a real thing he said.
Splashes all.
Yeah.
Splashes all.
Yeah. He was into mermaid shit. So for whatever reason, they just got together. He was like, she was a
That's
groupie.
That's how they met?
Well, she was a groupie, and he's like, what do you do for a living? She's like, I'm actually a mermaid. And he's like, okay.
I got to come see a show. Just, but wouldn't you, in your dad's defense,
yeah.
If you met a man or a woman right now, I don't care if it was a guy, I'd be like, you're a merman? I'm going to come see that.
Absolutely.
The fuck is that all
about? So he was just, I mean, it was love at first, splash. And it's a real white trash.
You're my Ariel. You know,
it's a real, it's like Splash, but it's not New York. It's, you know, in Florida. I mean, they both grew up in Long Island, and they got married, and I think they had 10 years of happiness, and then they had me.
Okay, so they're married 10 years.
10 years. They got married at 22, so for 10 years, they're just having fun. She's a mermaid. He's playing music, and then they have a fucking kid.
But now, wait. They relocate to Long Island?
Well,
or?
They always lived in Long Island. She was down in Florida being a mermaid.
Oh, she was just down there working.
She was just down there
swimming.
Working. Yeah. You go where the work is.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, that
you
mermaid
go
market.
Where the business is. And so they got married, and then like 22, they were young kids, man. They were young kids, and they had like 10 years, and then they had me, and then the fun's over. Because it's like, you can't be a mermaid anymore, and you're going to have to get a job. You can't just play music. So he became an office supply salesman, and she became a swim teacher, still in the
Kept
pool.
Kept it in the water.
Still in the pool. And so that was that. And then, you know, and they
Did
were both.
Did she wear the mermaid gear while she was swim teaching?
No, she didn't. She was like a... She started to gain weight. She started to become more buoyant in the water, you know, and then they were just, you know, they had me. It was 1985 and then the bills and then the fights and then we don't have any money and we gave up on our dreams. My mother always, I guess, thought she was going to be a mermaid.
I was going to say, what's the next level for that?
You know, I don't know that anyone ever asked her. I don't know that anyone sat down with her. Her guidance counselor should be taken out and shot in the face. You know what I mean? I think there was a real dereliction
like
of duty.
At Disney World,
she had a college
topped out.
She had a college degree to be a teacher, and she became a mermaid.
Wow,
like that. So that's where she was at. She was like, "I don't really like land." So
and
it was like
a,
you know, it was, you know what it was?
Fun.
It was supposed to be for families. It was just a bunch of dudes, you know, fucking disgusting scumbag Florida trash, jerking off to my mother swimming around in a tank, and she would have to. And she'd have to like breathe in. They were on like oxygen because she'd have to swim up to the top, get oxygen, and then swim around in this fucking tank.
Because she's not a real mermaid.
Because she's fake. She's a fraud. She's a fucking fraud.
This is my least favorite part right here when she goes up for air.
Yeah.
Right here,
so she goes up for air and then she comes down and just looking at a litany of just Florida trash standing there.
So what, in like a tank where you're, is it a dinner theater? Like,
yeah, it's kind
of, it like
they still
world?
Have it. You can look up Weeky Watchy Mermaids if, like, if you want a visual on that, which I think a lot of people do. There's some sickos listening to this.
Yeah, I
want to
look that up.
Yeah, I could get into that. And she told me this, you know, and then I saw pictures and, you know, she's in this tank. Maybe it was like a, it's still a, I think it's still a thing in Florida. Of course it is in Florida where people like to see it. It's just one of those weird things. It's
where in Florida?
I don't know. Where in Florida is a great question.
I feel like it's like the Everglades.
Yeah, I don't know where it is, but it's one of those, you know. It's
where
like,
y'all got the mermaid pussy?
Right. It's like a.
Where y'all keep the mermaid pussy?
Where can I fuck a fish?
Weeky watchy?
Yeah. All right. It's like a roadside attraction. My grandmother was like horrified.
Like a trailer behind
my
SeaWorld.
My grandmother was horrified.
I can imagine.
My grandmother went down to Florida and like threatened to disown her. My grandmother was like, just be a stripper. Just be a regular whore.
Just be a regular whore.
Like, what are you doing?
Why you gotta be a water whore, goddamn?
You know, like, you're swimming around. You got your tits out and you're stupid. Like, you're wearing that clam bra. From the Little Mermaid, yeah. You're like,
get out of the tank, get on the pole, goddamn.
You got a fake tail. There's guys fucking ogling you from a parking lot in Florida. Like, what are you fucking doing? You have a college degree, so that's mommy. And then,
wow.
And then Pop is, you know, Pop was he still kept the music going?
Are they both still around?
Yeah, mom's in a mental institution, and my father is checked out now. He's got another wife, but he's like, he just talks about his dogs. He loves his dogs. He's just, he got, you know, he's like, you know, Ruthie is a thinking dog. We named her after his wife is very liberal. So they have three dogs. I swear to Christ, Ruth, named after Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I figured.
Maya, named after Maya Angelou. Okay. White dog, named after Maya Angelou. Okay. And then Freddie, named after slave Frederick Douglass. Okay. These are the names of their three dogs. As I sit there at dinner listening to that, I'm like, okay. So he's also in a state-run institution, except it's private. I mean, he lives with his wife. But, I mean, he's out of it. She sent a picture the other day of him flossing in the kitchen, like that dance.
Oh, the dance. Yeah.
I think it's called floss. And she's like, look at your dad, and he's doing that. And I'm like, oh, he's checked out. Like, we'll be at dinner, and she'll be like, we're living in fascism. We're living in hell. And he's like, Ruth is a thinking dog. You can tell she's taking, you know, stock of what's going on. So he's dealt with it by just completely, like, he's out.
Yeah.
But it was brutal in the 80s. You know, when they had me, it was, like, tough to make money. My mother didn't save her mermaid
cash.
You're
an only child?
I'm it.
Thank God.
When you have a gay clown... You have like a gay Republican clown. It's kind of like, we've done enough.
Yeah.
It would be dangerous to procreate again. But she, you know, so her and him had some struggles. And it was, you know, it was tough because they had to grow up. And I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, they're all, 32 now.
You know, they came from the whole Woodstock generation of like, oh, the world's going to be different. Everything's going to change. It's going to be a revolution. And then fucking 1985, it's like, nah, it's kind of exactly what it is. Get a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at what age are you when they finally divorce?
I'm 13. So I was,
at
6 years old, I start being a child actor because my mother's like, I want to be an actor as a kid. I'm like, you know, look at me. It's kind of embarrassing. You watch old movies of me. It's kind of embarrassing.
What movies have you been in?
Well, no, not real ones, right? I mean, fucking home movies, okay? Do you really have to take me down to that? Oh, pull up my IMDb. Oh, Mike, the Christmas play I put on in 91 for Everyone Isn't On There? No, it's just I would, like, put on shows. You know, I was just wanted to be on TV. I point to TV. But, I mean, I've been on, you know, so I started acting. I was on Sesame Street.
Okay.
A couple of times.
That's legit.
Yeah, that's fucking an iconic show.
That's unbelievably
legit. Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. I danced a polka.
Dare I say your biggest credit to date.
You're not kidding.
No disrespect to your special.
No, listen, it was watched by hundreds of people. And I'm really proud of that.
Wait, do you know what episode you're on? Because that's all on HBO now. Do you ever go back and see your Sesame Street episode?
Well, it's on YouTube. If you go Dancing the Polka with Snuffleupagus,
okay.
I'm on there. And I also did another episode, and I forget who I was with. I think it was one of the other ones. I can't remember. But, you know, nothing memorable happened. I was never molested. I never got fame. But I acted for like 6 years, and I got close to shit. Like, I got close to, like, Grace Under Fire, that show.
Oh, yeah,
I remember. Second callback.
Rhett Butler, right?
We were about to fly to L.A., and then they were like, well, listen.
Brett Butler. What was her name?
Brett Butler.
Brett.
About to fly to L.A., and then they were just like, hey, man, we got another kid that's shorter. He looks younger. He looks better. And so then
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh,
so that was rough.
You get ready to fly there?
Yeah, I was getting ready to make it happen, and I remember that. And I remember just
your mom's like, "Fuck that, we're going to swim."
Yeah. Well, we went back to Penn Station in New York, and I just ate a Dairy Queen Blizzard and like softly cried on the Long Island Railroad on the way back to hell.
Oh,
but, you
my
know,
God. Well, that is Grace Under Fire.
Yeah, that's what. That's exactly, you know, it was one of those things where it was like my mother couldn't even comfort me because she was also upset.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm going to have to go back to being a mermaid. Like, I thought you were going to, you know, there's a part of the family that thinks like, oh, we're gonna make money. We'll be living in L.A. This kid will be a star. And it's like, no, no, no. Back to the public pool. Back to those snot-nosed little kids. Back to your loveless marriage. And dad, back to selling copiers, you know? Sorry I let everyone down again. I'm 9 at this point. I'm like,
right.
Sorry I let the family down.
It's on your back.
It's all on my back. Sorry.
It's on your back, sir.
And then the last thing we did, I got cast in this off-Broadway show, Annie Get Your Gun, and it was a 3-month tour around the East Coast of the United States. We went like as west as Colorado and as south as the Everglades, and every day you're on a bus for 8 hours driving, crisscrossing the country. Oh. Every night's a different hotel. Every night's a different show. The lady who is the star of the show is a drunk who trashes her hotel room. The managers have to go deal with that. She gets on the bus. She's got mascara cried down her face. She would look at me and be like, this fucking business is hell. I'm 11 at this point. You know what I mean? Yeah. She goes like this. I stole some cereal from the Continental breakfast, and I brought it out to the bus. And she looked at me. She goes, I saw you take that cereal. She goes, I'll tell you one thing. Keep stealing. Keep stealing. You know why? And I said, why? She goes, they'll take it all from you anyway. And I'm like, all right, well, fun stuff. So it was a brutal experience. And then at the end of that, I was done with acting. I was like, because I thought you get into acting, you're like, oh, I'm going to be Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I'm going to be on the cover of those magazines. And then when you end up, you're like 12 years old and you're on a bus full of crazy people going around the country. You're like, okay, this didn't work. Time to check out.
And you're by yourself or are you with your mom?
Mom is with
me. She is
all
the way.
Mom came with me. Yeah.
Is she hating it as much too at that point?
No, she digs it. She's having fun. Yeah. She's into it. She thinks it's going to lead somewhere. I mean, it was an experience. It was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had because, like, there were no cell phones. There was nothing to distract you. You were sitting on a bus, staring out the window for 8 hours through the Everglades, through Colorado Springs, through. So you're fucking seeing areas and taking stuff in. I still remember going through the Bible Belt. People have large crosses on their yard. Shit I had never seen.
Right.
That when you're like, you know, now, how much of that would you even see? You'd be on your phone.
Yep.
You'd be on your phone. You would miss so much. I remember being in Madison, Wisconsin, and just being in a blizzard and just watching, you know, the snow fall and being just so not distracted, not needing to capture it in any way. Just fuck, you know. So that was cool about it. But after that, it was like, I'm done with acting, you know, and I moved on to cocaine.
At 13?
Yeah, 12 and a half, 13.
How did you come? Okay,
well, so I was hanging out with older kids.
In that world,
well,
or
Long
out
Island.
Or back home?
No, back home.
Okay, back home.
Started smoking weed.
That's young.
First time I smoked weed, I went to a white girl named LaFawn's house.
LaFawn?
LaFawn, the white girl. That's a good sign.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, she was not a Rhodes Scholar. Fun woman, large woman, handsome woman, sturdy, stoic, big lady. You know, she had the Jimi Hendrix poster. The black light, the fucking, all the shit, I'd never been in a place like this before. The ashtray full with cigarettes, mom's out, dad's wherever.
How old is she?
16.
Oh, man, she's dealing at 16?
Well, she's just got weed and she's got friends and they bring me out. I literally tell my parents I'm at Chef's Club, which doesn't exist. At school, doesn't exist.
I'm at after school club.
Yeah, I'm at chef's club, and they're like, okay,
motherfucker, don't cook shit when he comes home.
Yeah, he's a fucking. So I went to LaFawn's house. I just started smoking weed, and I still remember like, oh, this is great. First time it didn't really work, but you're still hanging out with older kids, cool kids, and that's when I started to fall in love with the crack house vibe. Dirty house. Fun.
You liked it.
Come in. Loved it.
You did.
Loved it.
I was always so scared of that.
Oh, it was fun.
That was the vibe my schizophrenic cousin had in his home was the crack house vibe.
Like, yeah.
Ashtray full of cigarettes.
Yeah.
But there's a little left on it. He would smoke it right down in the butt. Yeah. He'd light those up again.
I still remember New Year's Eve. I was in eighth grade. We were at this crack house in my town. More of a coke house, but some people dabbled in harder stuff.
Sure.
And we were there. And we were just sitting there. There was about 5 families that lived in the house. And they all lived in different rooms. And these were all white people, by the way, too. This was all, you know, primarily, it's Long Island. It's, you know. And we would just be there, and there was something so, you know, each different room you could get coke, you could get weed, you could get whatever. And we were 14, 15 years old, and we were sitting there just getting high, getting fucked up.
Can you walk
up.
Us through that? Like, you go with someone that knows these people, or you guys are taking a flyer on, we were told to go here?
No, we just, somebody, our friend Tina, my friend Tina.
Of course, is always a Tina.
It's always
or a Tina.
Long Island is Tina's.
Yeah.
And they're bad news, but good news. She was fun. First line of coke, Tina's backyard. Tina's mother named Tony. Great. Great. Tony, high-priced call girl, takes her money.
What's how high price?
Back in the 70s, she was legit. All used right. to fuck in the Plaza Hotel, okay? She told me that when I was 11.
Told you that?
Yeah, when I was 11, she's like, I'm not one of these cheap whores. I fucked in the Plaza. I'm like, damn right you did.
God damn right.
Damn right you did.
God damn you're right.
I've always been close. I've always
Who
been close.
Tony?
Yeah. I've always been close with my friend's parents.
She's saying that to a child.
Yeah, to a child. She's a lot of fun. Still is. Love the woman. And she invested her money well. She
my God,
got into stocks. I mean, she was wild, and I became really best friends with her daughter. And her daughter's like, well, we're getting coke from these people. Why don't you meet them? And I met
her. So her mom knows her daughter's doing coke?
Probably. She knows about the weed and the booze. I don't think she'd be shocked if you said there was coke involved.
And wasn't grounding her or disciplining her for smoking weed and drinking at 13, 12.
I mean, you know, not really.
Okay.
That wasn't really part of it. She was what I consider a supportive parent.
Sure, yeah.
She was fun. She took us once to get bongs and stuff.
That's so nice.
Yeah, I mean, it was a diff. You may not raise your kids like this. You may have different ideas, but she took us to get bongs. She was legit. And we just, you know, we started that road of, like, smoking weed every day, getting high, you know, taking acid, tripping shrooms.
You're taking acid, too?
Eighth grade. The first time I took acid, this is a fact, with my good friend Shay, I don't want to say his last name, McGoolahan, and we were at, great kid, but, you know, he doesn't, well, he's in a private sector, he doesn't care.
Okay.
Maybe he does. But we were on the stage, eighth grade graduation. We took a tab of acid each. First time, eighth grade graduation, standing
never
there.
Taken acid.
We'd never taken acid before, but it was like it just got into town. Everybody, all the older high school kids were into it. I was like, this is, let's do it on graduate. Because our parents were like, oh, it's graduation night. You guys will have fun. I was like, I'll stay over Shay. She was like, I'll stay over his house. And then we'll just walk around town all night tripping on acid, you know? So we take the acid, and we're standing there, and this valedictorian keeps going on and on. It's like, will you shut the fuck up? Enough. You're in eighth grade.
Eighth grade valedictorian.
What do you
yeah,
have
right?
to say?
Shut the fuck up.
It was this girl, and she just kept going on and on about, you know, and she's like, when my great grandparents came to this country, clearly not written by her.
Right, yeah.
Clearly written by a super PAC that had given her all these fucking talking points to, and we just started feeling really like, oh, fuck, this is about to. Finally, we got out of there, went to a beach and tripped out, but that was like the beginning of psychedelics, and we did shrooms, we took acid and Special K, and we would do ecstasy.
You were doing ketamine?
Yeah, ketamine.
At 12 and 13?
Well, 14, 15 at that point.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, we were really partying, really hanging out with older kids.
I swear I hear stories like this, and I mean, I smoke weed.
Yeah.
But I'll have a drink or two.
Yeah.
And when I hear stories like this, it just makes me feel like a virgin.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean?
I'm like,
no,
you're,
I mean, you're clearly a pussy. We would drive to the Bronx and get coke. You know, we'd just hop in a car with
anyone.
A guy named Hector.
Right, yeah.
Hector
right.
and Sonia. Some of our funnest nights were with Hector and Sonia. I still don't know who they were. I literally don't know who they were. It was a guy named Hector, some girl named Sonia, and some other girl named Denise. And I'm always worried, like, somebody, they're going to hit me up on Instagram now, and I'm just going to relapse, because I remember how fun it was. They're like, we heard that podcast. That was a good time. And I'm like, let's fucking get the old gang together. And we would just, you know, we were 14, 15 years old. We were driving at blow, and then just do it in a project.
That's what I'm saying. Walk
like,
me
there.
Through walking into a crack house. When you walk in, are there a bunch of people? And you say you're going different rooms, have different things.
Yeah, there's
are
a bunch of people.
Are you buying and leaving?
They
or
don't,
are you?
So you walk into a crack house. There's, you know, there's a usually a lot of people on the couch.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of people on the couch. It's a couch life.
Sure.
It's a couch life. It's like a steakhouse. I love steakhouses now. And it's all about the raw materials. Mm-hmm. Steak, crack. The best steakhouses are sparsely decorated. You know, it's not a lot of pomp and circumstance. You know, it's
best
pretty
sushi
much
places are all fluorescent
all,
lights
yeah.
and shit. Yeah.
So you walk in and there's a lot of people on the couch. There's fat girls on their phones, you know, and they always had very clean cars. The fat girls had the clean car. Mm. Very interesting, because they couldn't control what they put into their body, but they liked to have a clean environment. Very interesting.
That is interesting.
And then there were people that were like living in and out of motels. These were grifters. These people, it's harder for them to exist now because you're on the grid now. You need a fucking credit score to sleep on a couch now. Back then, handshake deals, cash deals,
yeah, drug
here
deals.
It is, all that shit. People were able to kind of exist on the subterranean level of the economy forever. I mean, these people kind of never existed. The government, I guess, assumed that half of them were dead. And they'd be in and out of jail. And we were 13 or 14, so, like, we were too young. And, I mean, we heard them talking one night. They're like, if these kids OD, you know, we got to, like, roll their bodies out of this fucking house.
You heard that?
Yeah, but we understood. We got it. I'm like, yeah, of course. These people have kids, you know? And they can't. I mean, you know, so you'd walk in, there'd be a lot of people on the couch. People would be rolling blunts. People might be. Coke was never really done in the open as much. Coke was done in a room. Coke was special. So Coke was done. Who's got? Nobody was ever like putting it out there like, all right, everybody grab a straw. It's Christmas.
Right.
It was always like, you know what I mean? It was always like, hey, come here. It's like, come here. I got to talk to you. That was a huge thing. I got to talk to you. Close the door. Lock the door. People would come out chatty, smoking cigarettes. What'd you talk about? What were you talking about? The economy?
Yeah, right.
What were you going into? And places like that just received people like me, people, my friend, that had stolen money from their parents with open arms. And we looked older. We were fun to hang out with. These people were fun. I mean, I hate to say it. They were fun. I mean, there were bad times. There were times when no one had drugs or money or people were just getting out of jail. I don't want to paint a completely. There were times when their kids were like, I'm hungry. The kids were very selfish. They're always asking for food.
I'm hungry.
You know, can you read to me? Can we go see a movie? And it really turned me off.
Can I have a hug?
It turned me off children because I realized, I'm like, oh, it's really about them to an unhealthy degree. Can't they see their parents are suffering? It was a crazy, wild place. And I got very comfortable in those places. I got very comfortable pulling a ratty, cigarette-stained blanket over myself and falling asleep on a couch. Very comfortable in that environment. Just sleeping on it with all your clothes on, but just pulling some, you know, cigarette hole blanket and just passing out for a little while and waking up. And I got very comfortable in those environments around a lot of drugs. Some people would have guns. Some people would be talking about, you know, fights they were in and shit. The cops raided the house a few times.
I was about to ask if you'd ever been raided while you were in there?
Yeah, when I was in there, yeah.
And do they arrest you?
No, you're young. They send you home.
They just send you home?
They send you home. Yeah.
Wow. They're lucky.
Yeah, we're 13, 14. I mean, they just fucking say, get out of here.
So much crime and shit going on. But what are you going to do?
That was like part of the allure of, you know, you're doing drugs. And, you know, there are these places that you can kind of hang out because I'm from New York and Long Island, it's freezing. So you got to go somewhere for, you know, November through March, you kind of got to be in an environment and you can't get high at your house. And so you got to find these places where you could, like, you would go and buy drugs from them and then do it with them. So it was kind of like a win-win for them. You would go.
That's what I love about the dispensaries now. You can go buy weed and leave. You don't have to sit there and smoke with somebody, some fucking drug dealer.
I still remember
shit.
Some of the best advice I ever got. There was this guy named Vinny who lived in the crack house. He took a bite out of a tomato, like an apple, which was odd.
Yeah.
That's what Sicilians do. And he said to me once, he goes, do you boys want to know? And he was shirtless. He was doing a bump of coke off like a hunting knife. And he said to me and my friend, do you guys want to know the secret to life? And we said, yes. And we thought it made sense that he would have it. For whatever reason, because at that point, this guy was the winner. He had no shirt. He was sniffing coke. He had a knife. This guy's figured it out. He had a house. You know, he had all his friends over every day. They were all, you know, and he said to us, he goes, I don't hang out with anyone who's lower than me or anyone who can't do nothing for me. And we were like, you know what? Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. You know? So.
But when you're the bottom of the fucking barrel.
Yeah. When you're at the bottom of the barrel.
You don't have to worry about hanging out by any lower than you.
There was this lady, Rose, who lived in the house, who fought this guy. She wrestled this guy. This was real feminism. This wasn't Jezebel feminism. She fought a guy in front of us. She tackled a fucking dude.
Rose?
And she's like, you want to play for real? She was a beast of a woman. we got robbed in our town. This guy came up to us, put a gun, took a gun out,
told us,
he was like, give us all your money, because he knew.
Where were you?
We were at the train station, and he knew we were waiting for fucking the drugs, you know?
Oh, you weren't actually waiting for a train.
No, we never were.
Yeah.
We never were going into the museum in the city. We were always just waiting for drugs. From a guy named Buckshot, but no one was
for real.
But no one was supposed to call him Buckshot.
Why is Buckshot?
He got shot. No one was supposed to call him Buckshot. One day I picked up the phone. I was like, "Hey, is this Buckshot?" He's like, "Who the fuck told you to call me that?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry. That's just what people call you." He's like, "You're not supposed to fucking call me that." So he knew it was his nickname. But I'm like, "All right, I apologize." So this guy robbed us. We went to this lady's house, Lady Rosie's house, and she knocked on his door, and it was the most gangster thing ever. She's like, "You know these are my friends, so what you're going to do now is
give me..." She knew who the guy was that robbed
you? Oh, yeah. We all did. So she knocked on his door. We didn't know where he lived. She knocked on his door and said, "Here's what's going to happen. You're going to give all the money back right now, or you're going to call all your friends, and I'm going to call all my friends." And she was affiliated with larger criminal enterprises, you know, not like, you know, street gang. She knew people that could, you know, make that guy's life a problem. So she was just like, "Let's fight." And the guy came out and gave her all the money. She's like, "You know that?" Because the reality is, we're spending money at her house. We're buying drugs from her. She's like, "You're fucking with my money, so to speak."
Businesswoman.
You feel cool. And then we would walk. We were eating Italian. We had our money back. We're eating Italian ices. And this big fat lady's walking us down the block. And we're like, you know, life is good. Life wasn't good, but we thought it was. We're like, we got back. We got people that care about us. You know, and then they all moved away. And then they all moved away. And it was sad. I remember the day they all left.
What do you mean, one day?
One day they just blew out of town like gypsies, Ryan.
They left.
They just left us. They left us to fend for ourselves, to get our own coke, to do it in a train booth or in a car. It was rough. It was a sad day.
And do your parents ever find it? Did they ever catch you? Do they know you're doing this?
They know. So at one point, they kind of had a suspicion because I told my friend, we did this game all the time. I'm staying at Shay's. Shay's staying at my house. And we'd walk home every night at 3:30 in the morning. And when there was this a part in our neighborhood where we turned the block. We'd always end up at Shay's house because he had a basement. And we'd go in the basement. So every time we turned the corner, we would see his house. And it was perfectly dark. And 3:30 in the morning, the one night we turn the corner, we see his house is all lit up.
Oh, shit.
We know we're fucked. We're coked out of our face. We're just fucking high. His mom, Barb McGoulahan, is in there. She's smoking a Marlboro Red. She's had some sangria.
You know Barb likes her sangria.
Barb's ready to go. Barb's not fucking around. You know what I mean? By the way, a few blocks away, crazy Patty Dillon, who's no longer a mermaid, but still a sea creature because she's gained some weight.
And still in the
She's
water.
Now Ursula. She's not Ariel. So Patty Dillon's on the other side of town communicating with Barb via the old landline.
Oh, yeah.
The old landline phone that you would tangle up in cords and sit there. And my mom was probably taking over-the-counter medication. My father was some fucking where playing some faggoty version of American Pie somewhere while no one gave a shit in complete obscurity. You know, me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Everyone like, yeah, okay, get off the stage. So we turn the corner. We see this fucking lights out. And we just look at each other. We're like, we're fucked. This is our version of being fucked. And this is kind of white privilege because other people's version of being fucked is they go to jail for 5 years.
Yeah, right.
So I get
or
it.
Or dead in a
I
crack
get
house.
I get that people are probably listening to this. And they're like, this guy's talking about crack houses. Like they're fun. They are fun. But you know what I mean? Fuck off. They are fun. Go to one. So
go to one.
So we end up there. We open the door. We go. We gotta go. So we have this debate. We're like, do we go in the front door or do we sneak in? And we're like, well, we can't sneak in. The fucking lights are on. And I'm like, who's that in the window? And he's like, it's Barb. I'm like, fuck. We open the door and Barb has one. She's still one of the funniest people that I've ever met. Effortlessly funny. She has great fucking lines, and after a few pops and a couple of smokes, she delivers just this greeting, and she always did it when we were kind of fucking high. As soon as the door opened, you just hear from her chair, she doesn't get up, you just see the plumes of smoke rising, she goes, hello, boys. Have a good night. And we're just like, fuck, fuck. She goes, you know, I'm on the phone with Patty Dillon. She thinks you boys are out doing drugs, and maybe we should call the police on you. Now, we're all coked out of
our
head.
They told us to go home.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
They've already been there. And they weren't even cops. They were special ops narcs. They took our drugs and did them with us. You don't know how this country is run.
Did that really happen?
No, but you don't know how this country is run, you fucking sheep. Authority's not real. No. So we walk in. We're coming down from coke, which is the worst feeling ever, especially in a very well-lit living room with Barb.
Yeah, smoke-filled.
That is not where you want to be. Barb's fun when you're high.
Yeah.
Because she's like, you want pizza, boys? And you're like, yes, I am. We had a great barbecue chicken pizza in our town, and it was so good. It was just chicken cutlets cut up with open pit barbecue sauce, which
that
is like this
delicious,
tangy, metallic barbecue. If anyone's ever had open pit, it's tangy, metallic, reddish brown color. When you eat it, it tastes metallic and factory made, machine made. Chop it up with cutlets. It just went on top of a regular pizza, which is what made it so good. But coked out in the living room, still getting those nasty, not quite drips, but your body still doesn't know what's happening. And she goes, Tim, I think you better go home. Me and your mother are still deciding what to do with you boys. You boys are heading down a bad road, you know? And we're like, we were at the park. We're walking around the park. The park is closed, boys. Not that park. She's like, what park? We didn't think of another park. We're like, another park. She's like, boys, I think you better quit while you're ahead. So we're like, oh, good. So I go home to my house. My mother is up. She's like, I open the door. My mother is just screaming at the top of her lungs. I swear to God, drug addicts, alcoholics, drug addicts, alcoholics, just over and over again to no one. And then she came to me. She's like, your eyes are dilated. You should go to the hospital. Are you going to die? What if you die? This is crazy. Are you on drugs? What's wrong? And I'm like, God, I mean, this is really, really unfair. She finally lets us go to sleep. And then we woke up the next day and did it all again. You know? You know why, Rye? Because we love the game.
Yeah.
And we had
crack
a laugh.
Houses
and
are fun.
And we told that story in a crack house. And everybody's like, we were kids once, too. You know? So
I feel like you would be blowing minds in a crack house telling people your mom
was a mermaid. But
here's
the other thing. Our families were degenerate Irish alcoholics. This is what they didn't get. The parties my father had, everybody, you know, like my grandfather was a very successful guy, didn't trickle down, but he had this big house that we had 50 people at Thanksgiving. Everybody was drinking. My dad was playing music. There were fist fights. There was booze. There was everything's about excess and fun. Even after I got rid of these drugs, I was an alcoholic for years because that was the thing that was okay. My family didn't mind when I was guzzling back martinis. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
I was 300 pounds eating ribeyes and martinis. Fucking on the edge of death. My family is like, he's a good boy. He's a great. When I was hanging out in a dirt big bar called Lisa's Lounge in Long Island, a bar, I swear to God.
Double L?
Double L. That's what we called it. People actually called it the double homicide because two people got shot. Two people got shot outside. We call it the double homicide. Lisa was the owner's daughter. She had been killed in a DUI. And he opened the bar and put her picture on.
What is that, a DUI?
DWI, okay. Driving while intoxicated. I don't know if she was drunk or the driver was, whatever.
Well, see, that's the, like, Maryland is the, I'm from Maryland. We have DWI there.
Yeah.
It's strictly for alcohol, intoxication.
Yeah.
Here, everything's just a DUI.
Right.
So which had, actually, it should.
So she was killed in a drunk driving accident. They named the bar after her, and her photo was on the center of the bar, and we would all drink and we'd do shots to her. Thank you, Lisa! I mean, it was sick.
Yeah.
And very fun. This is the problem. Nobody admits the fun. That's the thing with Trump. Everyone's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yay, he sucks. He's bad. But there's fun there. Just admit it's fun, and then we'll deal with the problems. So I start drinking. I told my father, I'm like, you know, Dad, I'm hanging out in this bar every night, Lisa's Lounge. Here's what the appropriate response is to a 23-year-old who tells you that. Son, we'll get you help. Son, you should not do that. Son, that's unhealthy. The response of my father was, and I quote, son, a corner bar has played a role in every Dylan's life. Uncle Tommy had Buckley's. Oh. I had my father's place. Uncle Mikey had a place called Sure. And I was like, oh, I am fucked. I got to look elsewhere for help. And I finally sobered up at 25. But all I mean,
so let's go back.
Yeah,
because we've got still quite a bit to cover here.
Oh, there's a lot.
So you're 25. You sober up, but when do you stop the drugs? What age do you stop doing drugs?
Good question. So I go to high school. I'm in high school.
This is fucking nuts to me. We're just starting high school. We've heard all this and we're freshmen.
You're going to high school. I go to
we don't even have a learner's permit yet.
So I go to a Catholic high school. Dude, I didn't get a learner's
Catholic
permit until
high school.
Yeah, because my parents are like, you got to start doing drugs with a better class of people.
At least people to believe
my
in
my parents
Jesus.
Are like, at least do drugs with people that have multiple rooms in their house, right? You fucking trash bag.
When did you, know, wait, we're good when people. Did you get your learners?
College, first year of college. Right. I was out of it because I was just drugged up in people's cars.
So yeah, you shouldn't.
High school was a fun event. Largely, you know, ninth grade, I was still fucking around with some of the harder drugs. But then 10th and 11th and 12th grade, really a weed event and a booze event. And I was in ninth grade and 10th grade, I was like not a popular kid, kind of awkward, kind of not really. 11th grade, I started to come out of my shell. 12th grade, I got nominated for like Homecoming King. I was like a really right. popular kid. Yeah. And a lot of, you know, and I would drink hard. I never drank anything with bubbles. So I'd always walk around a high school party with a bottle of Van Gogh vodka or Grey Goose or whatever and drink like martinis. I would just have vodka on the rocks and I would drink with people's parents. Everyone thought it was like hilarious, you know, everyone thought it was funny.
But at this point, 13 is when you say your parents split. So
yeah, they
just
split
before
up.
High school.
Yeah.
So can we go back to that for a second?
Sure.
So who do you live with?
I'm living with my mom for 7th and 8th grade.
Okay.
And then in 9th grade, it's decided I go move with my dad and go to a Catholic school because I'm having issues. So, I mean, I'm staying out late.
Issues.
I have all these problems. And they're like, listen.
And have you come out to your parents
no,
at that
no,
point?
No, I didn't come out till 25.
Oh, 25.
I didn't come out of the closet until 25 years old. And I had a meeting with my agent manager and they said, are you gay? And I'm like, no. And they're like, could you be gay? And I said, sure, but can I do? They're like, we can get you a 9-minute Netflix special if you're gay. So I became gay. And it's very hard in the beginning, but you just keep doing it. It's like comedy. You just keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. And then you get to a point where you can do it. No, I knew since I was like 12, but I hit it. You know, I hit it. And it was Long Island. Nobody's really, you know, it's not like an Irish Catholic family. You just kind of keep it low.
All right, we're going to come back to that. We've got so much.
Of course.
Let's go to divorce. Now you're with dad.
Now I'm with dad. I'm in high school.
And we're in high school.
And I'm having, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I'm 4 years. I'm, you know, meeting other kids. And some of these are really rich kids. And some of these are not.
And these are all new kids. They're not any of the carryover from middle school.
No, I'm in Malvern, Long Island, which is not the town I grew up in. It's about 20 minutes from where I grew up because I moved in with my dad. And my school is about a half hour from me, 40 minutes from me. So I got to take a bus every day to school and back. Catholic schools in Long Island, they have kids from every different town. So you have rich kids. You have poor kids. You have kids who are trashy and do drugs with their family. You have kids whose families are really successful, proper, you know, Long Island, you know. And so we were, you know, I was kind of all over the map. In 9th and 10th grade, were an adjustment. And then 11th grade, I started to make friends. And we started to, like, you know, that's when I started drinking. I'd never drank before 11th grade.
It was just drugs.
Just drugs. I'd never taken a drink.
How's that even happen?
Well, because I think
none of those addicts in the house were just all drugs, huh? They're not. They don't.
We were really into drugs, man. I mean, they were drinking. Yeah. They would drink, but it was never. It was always secondary. And they would go to bars. We couldn't get into bars, and drinking really happened in bars. 11th grade, we all got fake IDs. We started going to bars. We started fucking around. We started hanging out in a martini bar called the Baby Grand. When I was in 11th grade, I looked like I was like 40. So, because if you're a bigger person, and I've talked about this before, when you go through puberty, you don't evolve into that like cute, like half guy. You just become a dad. So after puberty, you're a father. You're a dad. You're literally a dad.
Okay.
And you present as a dad. You start dressing like a dad. You adopt khakis. You know, you're walking around in sweaters. So we started wearing our Catholic school blazers, me and my friend Paul Homkow. I don't want to say his last name, Homkow. And we would go to this place called the Baby Grand with our Holy Trinity Catholic High School blazers on. These fucking idiots, I guess, just thought we were businessmen, or they didn't care. This was like a high-end bar. It was a martini lounge, but high-end in the sense where this is where guys would cheat on their wives. And it was like very dark. And we would, and listen, our parents would drop us off there, you know? They had no problem with us, And I see your face. You're like, how is it? But this is not 2019 where everybody's a cuck. This was when people were cool. You could be like, we're going to the bar anyway. Drive us or don't. These people barely wanted kids. These were baby boomers. These people like, just get out of my I'm trying to get drunk. Can you get out of my house?
Yeah.
And they were like, basically their attitude was like, well, listen, if we don't drive them, they're going to drive drunk. Or if they don't get high here, they're going to get high somewhere else. It was this weird like logic that they all had. You know, they're going to be doing fucking coke somewhere else. Do it at the kitchen table in front of us and with us, okay? Be
like
honest.
Like a family.
Like a fucking family. So we used to hang out at this martini bar, and we would get hammered. And I mean, I was just, you know, drinking gin martinis, vodka, shots. You know, you would get really, really fucked up. 99 bananas, all these 151, these things that aren't, you know. And I remember us, we would vomit. We would, you know, we would like, I'd wake up and not know where I was. It was like, but I just fell in love with that idea of booze because it was cool. It was okay. It was like, our parents are doing this. The whole world is doing this. It's okay. High school parties were all about getting drunk. It was fun to have a bottle of vodka and walk around a house and get hammered. I fell in love with booze. And I really, you know, wasn't really doing that many. I was smoking weed, but I wasn't really doing any hard drugs. Because they weren't around.
I was going to say, that probably helped you transition out of that not being around it so
much,
right? Yeah,
I wasn't really around it. And then I graduated high school. And
were you a good student?
No, I was funny.
You were a popular student.
I was popular, okay. Which is much more important in life.
Way
for
more
anyone
important.
Who's listening.
Anybody.
I was smart, but I wasn't, I was never like studious. And I always thought, because when I was a kid, I was like an actor. I was always like, I'll figure out a way around the system. I knew the system wasn't for me. I would sit there and they would be like, you're going to go to college and then you're going to get an internship and then you're going to get a job. And I'm like, no, I'll do something else. And I might die, but I'm not. There's something about that. But so after high school, I graduate and I go to community college in Long Island and I meet a guy who has a Range Rover. And I said to him, how did you get that Range Rover? And he goes, I sell mortgages. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, I sell mortgages. I barely knew what a mortgage was. He's like, it's a loan for people to buy a house. And I'm like, how do people qualify? He goes, everybody qualifies. This was 2006.
Oh.
He goes, everybody qualifies. It's the easiest thing in the world. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah. I'm like, so we're smoking a blunt. We're on debate team. And I'm in the Woodland Hills Marriott, eating California Eggs Benedict, beautiful Eggs Benedict with avocado and tomato. I'm eating that, and then I'm killing, and this is my debate partner, and I'm really good on my feet. And he said to me, he goes, afterwards, we're sitting in a bar in Topanga Canyon. This is the first time I was ever in L.A.
What college are you going to?
So fucking cool. Nassau Community College in
Long
Island.
That's out there? Oh.
But Nationals, debate Nationals were in L.A.
Oh, it's out here. Okay.
So we're sitting there at a bar in Topanga Canyon.
I'm former JUCO too, brother.
Okay, cool. So we're smoking weed, and my friend Kenny says to me, he's like, listen, you got to come into my office. You're really good. I think you're going to be really good at this job. And I'm like, okay, sure, I'll give it a shot. You have a Range Rover. That's great. You know? And we all these kids took politics so seriously. We were all laughing at them. These kids were getting upset if they lost a debate round. They were crying. I was a closeted gay guy. I was a drug addict. I was just a cynical guy. I didn't care about anything. I was like, oh, fuck it. Everything's fucked. System's fucked. And Kenny was also that type of guy. He was like a crook. He was like that. So he never like pushed me to be honest or introspective. He was just like, yeah, this is the way the world works. And here's how you can get a car. And here's how you can whatever. So I was like, cool. And I went into his office and they put me on the phone with somebody. And I was really, really good at like, you know, just kind of bullshitting and, you know, they were interested, and we hung up the phone, and so that started that journey where I spent like 4 years as a mortgage broker, made some money, never made a lot of money, but that led me back into coke pretty hard.
Once you got the money?
Once I got a little bit of money, and everybody in the office was doing coke in the office. We had two people overdose in our office and
die.
Holy
shit!
Yeah. Not on coke, on a myriad of drugs. But I went to two funerals in a 24-month span. I was working for a 24-year-old guy who had sold ecstasy, and his lawyer told him, I can't get you out of jail if you get popped again. You got to find something else to sell. So this guy went and started a mortgage, got franchised a mortgage bank, and this was a 24-year-old kid who was making $80,000 a month. He was driving a 745 BMW or 740, whatever it is, BMW, and he had just bought a house on the water, and he was 24 years old, and I was 19, Jeez. And I was looking at all these guys like, these are the fucking dudes. And they were good-looking guys. So this gay guy, you're like, oh, cool. So I'm hanging out with guys that are good-looking, they're in shape, they're rich, and they're fucking, they love me, and they treated me like, you know, and I wasn't making a lot of money because I was like just a cold caller, and I'm originating leads, kind of handing them off. But that was when I got back into serious, you know, cocaine and crazy, and just showing up to somebody's house trying to sell a mortgage, sweating profusely, coked out of my face. Just like, hey, how are you? Good to be here. Are you Mrs. Miller? Are you Mr. Miller? Listen, we have a lot of products. I think the product you're really going to like is the pay option ARM. You have four payments. You could do an interest-only loan. You could do a 2% down. You could defer interest if you want. You get on the back end. And these people were just Long Island trash. You're like, can we afford the pool? And I'm like, you can afford it all. It's all yours. And they were like, okay. You seem like a degenerate used car salesman who's on the brink of death.
You remind me of my cousin.
Yeah. You remind me of my father. One lady told me that. She goes, you remind me of my father. Yeah. He died from the drink. I was like, great. Let's sign these papers.
Yeah.
You know, and I bought a house. I bought a house at 22 years old.
Did you?
With a subprime mortgage. I sold myself. Why not? Everyone else is having all this fun. I want to get involved. And here's the other thing. Nobody knew this was going to blow up. Like, I know that everybody thinks this was not like a pump and dump stock scheme. I'm not like ripping off old people. I'm giving my family my card at Christmas. I'm like, buy a house from me. Buy a mortgage. It's all good. We're all good. It's fine. Every adult in the whole world was like, yeah, this will work out. The President Bush gets out and he's like, we're record high home ownership. I'm like, oh, good. I'm part of that.
Yeah.
There was no feel. Like, now there's this Monday morning quarterbacking where this is my problem with everybody on Twitter. History started yesterday. For all of these people,
right, yeah.
History started 3 hours ago. And I'm like, no, this was an entire frenzy that the entire country was caught up in. And they try to blame, like...
My buddy hit me up about it. He's like, if you have 10 liquid right now, you can buy a house. I'm like,
yeah,
I have it, but I just don't see how that's going to
It started in Irvine, California.
Did it really?
All started in Irvine, California with a bank called Countrywide Home Loans, which was the largest subprime mortgage originator in the country. And there was a lot of other loans, a lot of other banks that were all based in Irvine. They were all based. That was like, and then Long Island, I think, had the second largest collection of mortgage banks in the country. And Long Island's one of those areas where it's like, it's a bunch of people ready to sell whatever is hot. And, you know, there's a lot of space. There's a lot of empty office buildings. So these office buildings just filled up with 22-year-olds selling loans. And then later, it emptied out, and those people all went to some other business. I remember sitting in 2009, well after the bust, in an office with eight guys, with a couple of women too, sitting there, no windows, fruit flies, we're making no money, we're all broke. Our mother, some of the guys' moms are dropping them off. I have a car that's like unregistered, a Suburban. I just hope I don't get pulled over. I'm living in a house that's being foreclosed on. I'm still trying to sell these mortgages. 2009, way after the thing had collapsed, that was the point when I said to myself, if I keep going the way I'm going, I'm going to die. Right. Because life keeps getting worse, and I need stronger and stronger drugs. And I was boozing up. I was drinking 3 or 4 big martinis or big glasses of vodka at a bar every night, getting in my car and driving home. So it was crazy.
And doesn't it blow your mind, too, that literally you went from crack houses to these white-collar jobs, and they're all doing the cocaine, too?
Everyone's doing the same thing.
Everyone's doing the same thing in different buildings.
The last-ditch attempt to save my house, my mother got out of her mental institution. She had a weekend pass, and she goes, I met a guy named Phil. He wants to rent a room in the house. And I said, well, it sounds like a great idea. Where did you meet him? She goes, the mental institution, which I called the hatch, the booby hatch. I was like, you meet him in the hatch? She goes, yeah, but he was only there briefly getting himself together. Phil was an old Vegas lounge singer, swear to God, who was had problems with booze, had problems with everything. I gave him my room, and I slept on the couch. So I'm 25 years old. I would get home. Phil's in my room.
How old's Phil?
60s.
Okay.
Late 60s, playing a Casio keyboard, singing Mac the Knife. And I'm like, I get home, and I'm like, Phil, what are you doing? He's like, I'm getting ready. I have a set. and he was like playing at shitty like Long Island hotels and old age homes. He was on that circuit and he was singing Mac the Knife, and I would fall asleep every night, and next to me was this stranger, this lunatic who just gotten out of an insane asylum, playing Mac the Knife on his keyboard, getting ready for a hit. And I just said to myself, I'm like,
when the clock strikes.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, when the clock.
To
dude, it like, was surreal. It was surreal. I was just coming down off coke. And he's like, and the baba. And I'm like, fucking Christ. There was this big raccoon in my yard, this fat raccoon who used to hang out outside. I don't know if he was dancing to it, but he was curious. So he'd be like, Mac the Knife. And I would just stare at this raccoon through the plated glass door. And me and the raccoon were looking at each other like, what is this? What is life? What is the point of it all? And I'd be like, I don't know. I did a line when I was 12 and I ended up here. I had no idea how this happened. I was supposed to be a child actor. And then I was supposed to be a real estate titan. And now I just fucking, I ended up listening to some old guy play Sinatra. I don't get it either.
Off the strip.
Way off the strip.
Way off the
line. You couldn't be further off the strip. So I, at that point, I really started to. But the,
wait,
but I,
what's the most money you made at your best during the boom? What would you
there
say?
There was 1 month I made $28,000.
Wow.
And I felt great.
Yeah.
I made 28 grand.
It doesn't help the addiction or any of that.
No.
Obviously.
I mean, every day, my just drug intake, my the price of just existing was very high.
Yeah.
I was taking Vicodin, Percocet.
Mixing all that with alcohol, too?
Well, I would drink at night. You'd wake up with a hangover, and you can't have a drink in the morning. So you'd have to take a couple of pills to just get into the day. And I wouldn't drink every day. I had rules. So, like, you know, Wednesday night, it might, Wednesday was a Percocet weed day. Perky's all day at work, weed at night, fall asleep.
All day. Okay, let me just.
Sure.
Addicts fascinate me. I've had many in my family, and I wouldn't say that I'm not one of some substance. I'm
absolutely.
Sure. But. When I first, and we've talked about this openly, like when I first met Josh Adam Myers, he told me he was doing 20 to 25 Vicodin a day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how does your, like, I felt like if I took 25 Advil, my body would throw it up. He's like, well, you get used to it. I'm like,
yeah.
It's a lot to get used to, you know? So when I had hurt my back, I have a tear in a disc in my back.
Yeah.
And they gave me Percocet for the pain. And I took one and I started fucking hallucinating. And
yeah.
I started itching myself and scratching.
Oh, yeah.
And
nothing's
then I,
better than a good perky scratch.
But then I start vomiting.
Oh.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I break them in half. I think maybe they're too strong.
Oh, you break No, you take two. Break them in half. What the fuck's wrong with you? Everything's happening that should be happening.
So I talked to my doctor, and he's like, it's not really an allergy, but your body, if you're throwing up from it, you're not, it ain't good for you. We'll switch it to this. But none of them, Vicodin, none of the painkillers work with my system.
Right.
You know what I mean? They
of
just
course.
Make me nauseous as fuck all day. And I will still wake up the next day tired. It's, you know, I'm originally from Baltimore. You see people fall asleep standing up on the fucking sidewalk from heroin.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what these pills
from
are.
Crab dip.
Yeah.
Too. It's a bad, God, I love a nice dip.
Dude. But I'm just falling asleep at work, or I'm falling asleep driving and shit. I'm like,
yeah.
So how are you functioning at work on a couple of these?
I think one of the things is when you get introduced to a substance when you're younger, you got to realize that your body just has a reserve of energy. Everything's kind of, if you're healthy, everything's kind of working kind of how it should. You can take things that you can't. I'm 34 now. I could never do the things that I did when I was younger. I was talking about it earlier. Like, you just have more energy. I used to be able to party all night, wake up, and go to work. I could never do that. Now I need sleep, or I'll take a nap. I could never just go the whole day now on just running on empty the way that I used to. So I think part of it might be that. But there are people that get addicted to these things later in life too. It really just depends on how your body responds. There are some people that, you know, are pill people. There's some people that just love weed. I have friends that have just, you know, they smoke a little weed. They have a panic attack. They're like, I don't get why this is fun at all.
Yeah.
I have friends that do coke once or twice. They're like, this is gross. I don't get why anyone does this. How do you get addicted to this? There are people who look at food and they're like, I eat to exist. So to me, I can't even understand, because food to me is like a celebration. It's a drug in its own world.
I have an unhealthy relationship. I eat to celebrate. I eat when I'm depressed. I eat when I'm bored. You know.
And there are people, like, I'll go out to lunch with somebody. I'll take them to, like, a really nice restaurant, and they'll get, like, a salad or something, because they don't care. They just eat to survive. And I'm like, okay, so everybody, but maybe those people are nymphomaniacs and they're destroying all
those. Absolutely. There's something else going on.
Destroying those relationships. Or maybe they're just sociopaths. I don't know. Like, I just know that I've been an addict since probably before I knew I was an addict. I was just an attention-seeking, broken person. So it manifested itself in several things throughout my life. You know, it's like, try to be an actor. Does it work? Try to be popular. Works, but still doesn't really make you happy. You get to the point where everybody, you get invited to parties. Who gives a fuck? Try to be rich after the subprime mortgage. You know, that doesn't work. And then finally, I was like, well, the one thing that I've always been throughout this is funny, and maybe I should try to be funny. But addiction is a weird thing, because it's one of those things where it never fully truly leaves you. You just got to channel those impulses into something positive. Some guys become great at business. Some people go into the gym.
I was about to say the workout freaks. A lot of those guys are former addicts, and they just transfer the addiction.
Because they have those types.
I wish I could transfer that addiction.
They have those tendencies.
Yes. So there's so much going on here, man. Good God. Thank you for sharing, by the way. Obviously, you're not really being that looked after while you're in high school with your dad and everything. Are you seeing, two questions, how often are you seeing your mom? And then at what age does she start to show signs of mental illness?
Yeah, good question.
And at what age do you realize and understand that?
I think before I was on the planet, when she was a mermaid, was probably when people started to fucking look at her and go, hey, are you fucking off? Are you nuts? You have a college degree. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You're doing a job where you can't even breathe. You have to get oxygen. No, she was always eccentric, man. She was always driving through McDonald's, collecting toys, collecting Beanie Babies, making late night runs to Burger King to get an Ariel or a Sebastian Little Mermaid toy.
That's real?
To complete a collection. Absolutely, it's real. She collected Hess trucks. She was always kind of...
Hey, I had Hess gas trucks.
Yeah, no one says you're okay. And so... You know, but listen, man, we're Irish Catholic family. Nobody's going to be like, is she okay? People are like, oh, she's eccentric. She's fun.
And were your grandparents involved at all?
My grandmother kind of raised me. My grandmother was the person who really gave a fuck about me. And my parents did too, but my grandmother was a hero of a person.
Mom's mom or dad's
mom? Mom's mom, hero. You know, my dad's grandfather was great too, especially when I was young. But my grandmother was a hero. Devout Catholic, gave everyone everything. Husband died when the kids were 9, raised my mother and her sister. Died at 87, had about 100 people at her funeral. She'd lived in the same town her whole life. She was a beast of a person. I mean, and I mean that in the best way, like, just would really live the way that Christ would have lived. Like, she was like, do you need a bed? Do you need food? Do you need money? Do you need something? If I can give it to you, I can give it. And she was the most moral person I've ever met. Genuinely moral, you know, in a way that most people aren't. So she was in my life big time. But my mother had always kind of displayed tendencies of being a little off. But she really started to crack. I was seeing her through high school here and there. I would go see her. But she started to kind of crack while I was in high school.
Okay.
And
she's living by herself?
In seventh and eighth grade, my father divorced. My mother had kept the house.
Okay.
And my mother had kept the house and rented rooms in the house. I was living with her. Some of the people...
Rooms to who?
Drug dealers. Okay. And she didn't really know, because she was kind of naive, but these were guys that worked construction. And they were living in rooms. One of them was a family, and these people were selling like large quantities of weed. These people could get you blow
out of your home,
out of my home. So I was living in a crack. So I'd go to each crack
house.
How'd
you know that? And she didn't.
Well, because I would knock on their door and say, "Hi, how are you?" They'd be like, "Tim, what's going on? Good." They're like,
"I got to talk to you for a second."
Are there any waffles left?
Door,
yes. Is there any coke left? Yes. So I would bounce around from crack house to crack house.
The amount of adults in your story that have allowed children to do drugs and or alcohol at that age is mind-blowing.
I would counter it with this. If you're determined, there's very little adults can do. And I know that that's such an unpopular narrative now, because everything's a helicopter parent. And I'm going to make my kid. Listen, if your kid is hell-bent on going out there, and I don't, and by the way, if you do the right things, they shouldn't be. But if your kid is hell-bent on going out and having some experiences, they're going to do it.
Yeah, I can't argue
they're
that.
Gonna they're going to do it. Your job as a parent is to make them not hell-bent
right.
on doing that shit. But so these people were living
but
in my house.
At least not to do it with them.
Right. And that's one of the reasons that they also decided you got to live with your dad, because it was like your mother's kind of losing the house. She's kind of losing everything. I mean, my mother moved in this lady, Michelle.
Her mind.
Yeah, her keys. She always loses her keys. My mother moved in this woman, Michelle, and Michelle was a lot of fun, and she drove an old Lincoln Continental, and me and my friend would just jump in the back, and we'd do cocaine and just drive around the town smoking cigarettes, driving around an old Lincoln
Christ.
Continental, air suspension, you'd kind of bounce around in the back seat.
I remember the old Lincolns.
She had a couple of kids. You know, a lot of these people had kids and stuff, and it was like, so I would be out in my town, and people was like, we got to go and get a pound of weed. I'm like, oh, where are you going? They're like, 269 Madison. I was like, oh, that's my house.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
For real?
Crazy. Under
and they're going to get a pound.
Yeah, and this was a nice house in a suburban area. This was not, you know?
Man.
Oh, yeah.
And you're hearing that, and you're like, that's my mom's place.
That's my mother's house. And she's worked. She was a swim teacher. She's working all day, every day, yeah. going home at night. She's not a drug addict. I mean, she would take Sudafed and shit like that she shouldn't take. She was an unhealthy eater, but she was not like in business with these people. They were just paying her rent. She didn't, you know what they were doing. And I think it kind of became apparent that you know, later on that they were fucking around. But I knew who they were. And they were already moved in by the time that I kind of was conscious of, you know, what they were all about, you know. But listen, we grew up in a town where drugs were a major thing. The town that I
– Clearly.
The guy that the Sopranos was based off of lived in my town. This guy, Vinny Ocean.
Oh, I didn't know
Vinny
that.
Palermo, Vinny Ocean. He ran the Cavalcanti family in New Jersey. He lived in my town. He lives in a house that looks exactly carbon copy of what David Chase made the Tony Soprano house look like.
The one where it drives up to the driveway.
Henry Hill from Goodfellas lived in my town.
Really?
Paulie from Goodfellas. Yeah.
Oh,
it was a
shit.
Mob town for years. So drugs, bars, nightclubs. Now, when I was growing up in the 90s, it was just the dirty remnants of that. You didn't have the respectability of the old school mob guys, but you had a lot of people hustling, selling drugs, a lot of nightclubs, a lot of shady shit. And so it wasn't unheard of. Like, I asked my dad, I was like, because my dad wasn't from my town and he moved there with my mother. And I was like, what was it like here in the 70s? He's like, people were tough. You know, he's like, I'd be playing music. You'd see somebody take a bottle and, you know, slash a guy's throat at a bar.
Damn.
Carotid artery just bleeding out. You'd see people like, man.
We're full circle. Good
yeah.
night.
Yeah. Good night, everybody. I meant they just start going into American Pie. From the Chevy to the left. But, you know, he was like, you know, it was kind of a town of like, these were not like, you know, this wasn't like a real money town where it's like old school aristocracy. There's some of that on Long Island. It also wasn't a town of like just pleasant middle class people. This was a town of nightclubs, big bars, you know, nightlife and people like that.
Yeah.
And so that kind of trickled down to a lot of the people that I knew and the people that my mom like rented rooms to.
So at this, when do you start to notice, when does it become apparent to you that, okay, mom's getting
ninth
worse?
Ninth or 10th grade, she starts talking about people following her.
Okay.
And
this is my cousin does the same.
She
people
starts talking
are
about
always
something called the
them.
Game. She starts talking about something called the game. She's like, I call it the game because they're playing a game with me. They're trying to leave me clues and let me know something about my past. And they're doing it in this very interesting way. They're showing me all these different things. And it was kind of
trail
trippy.
Of seashells.
It's trippy to hear your mother say that because
yeah.
you're sitting there. I'm like, I'm on acid and this doesn't make sense. I'm on a sheet of acid and this is not adding up. We're gonna lock. We have to lock you up soon.
Yeah.
And I heard this, and I was like, oh, she is really kind of fucking out there. And she believed that there was a group of people trying to show her something about her past, that she had said, maybe I'm Elvis's son. I mean, I'm Elvis's daughter. Sorry, she wasn't trans.
I
wish she was trans. I'd have a show. My trans schizophrenic mother on TBS. And that cured her. She was no longer schizophrenic when she transitioned. My mother had a cock made, and she's fine now.
It changed everything.
But she would tell me that, like, you know, maybe I'm Elvis's daughter. Maybe Uncle Seth was in the FBI or maybe he hid gold somewhere. And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, all these people are leaving me clues. She used to think motorcycles, which were everywhere in Long Island, were like sending her signals and protecting her. It was really creepy shit.
That's scary.
It's creepy, man. When you lose your mind like that, it's very scary. And it can happen to more people than you think. It's a hormonal thing. It could be brought on by whatever.
Is there a history of that in your family?
And that was just her. And then I asked the doctor, so I was worried about it. He's like, it usually comes on early onset when you're younger. Like, he's like, she was always kind of, you know, it's more prevalent in women than men. You know, but it's one of those things where it got weird and it stopped being, my mother was always wacky, but it was funny. It kind of stopped being funny and it started to get scary. Because she started looking out of windows and I was looking out of windows, but I'm like, I'm on coke all day and I'm thinking the feds are going to come and bust us because we have all this coke in the room. What's your excuse?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, the FBI is giving me signs that they're protecting me. I'm like, yeah, no, probably not. So she first started going into institutions when I was in high school.
Okay.
But it was like, you know, little weekends, little weeks, well, little things to get her back going. And then once I had graduated high school, I was in my early 20s. She went away for good. I mean, and I visit her once a week. I see her.
Who sent her? Who finally?
It was a fight, and my grandmother and my aunt had to commit her because it's very
her
hard.
Mom and sister had to. It's
very, very hard to commit someone in New York State who doesn't want to be committed, even when they are clearly a danger to themselves and others. Even when she's no longer caring for herself, she can't pay her bills, she cannot work, she's genuinely paranoid and scared. Still, it's tough at that time, and probably still, it's very tough to commit somebody. So they end up committing her, and she ends up spending, you know.
Goes to a mental institution.
She goes to a mental institution, a state-run institution, and she's been in maybe one or two different ones, but she's still there now. She'll be there forever because this is a problem that, listen, money could make it better. Money wouldn't fix it. She could sit in a mansion and go off her meds. Same shit.
Right.
It's unfortunately a situation where she has got to be monitored, you know? But I visit her every week. I love her. I still visit her every single week.
Good.
I take a train out to Long Island. I see her. I'll get her pizza. I'll get her food. She said to me, she goes, you're too fat to be on TV consistently. She'll say that to me. And I'm like, well, you're not wrong there. She's very good with business advice. She's like schizophrenic until the business. And then she's like oddly coherent and mean. She's like very cruel. And she makes a lot of sense. She's like, you know, the setup on that joke's so long. You don't need. I'm like, what kind of mental illness is this?
Yeah, right.
That the only clarity you have is ripping my act,
critiquing
to
my
shreds. God, you're fucking. You don't understand anything else except this. She should be an agent. But I still see her, and you know, I do what I can for her, and she, you know, watches the special. She'll tell me, she's like, I don't think you should say you're gay on television. And I'm like, why? She goes, there's a lot of people that don't like gay. You should just not say it. And she goes, you said I was schizophrenic on TV. She goes, I don't appreciate that. I go, well, you are schizophrenic. She goes, I was diagnosed as a schizoid. It's very different. And I'm like, I don't think it is. I'm not a doctor, and I don't think it is. But again, I'm the one who can leave here legally.
No problem.
So I'll take my word for it.
Yeah.
Okay? But I do what I can for her. But yeah, it's a rough, you know, it's a rough thing.
Does your dad communicate with her at all?
Not as much. And in the beginning, I was kind of disappointed. But now I think it would only confuse her. And she would think, like, does he want to get back together? Like, I think he could have visited her more. But I think there's, but I'm not getting him off the hook here. He fucking should have. But I think actually the fact that he didn't helps. Because she doesn't think that, like, something's being rekindled or whatever. I think, you know, at her stage.
Do you guys ever have conversations where about the past and she'll drop? See, my cousin, when he's on his meds, he's pretty fucking pinpoint accurate.
Yeah.
And he'll start to drop some shit about the family.
Yeah.
Where they'll be like, nah, no. I'm like, no, hold on.
Yeah.
You finish that fucking sentence.
Cause yeah.
You can see when he's on his meds, and when he's not, he's got that just lock.
Look.
Glazed. Look right through you. But on meds, he's dialed in, and he can remember things from the past.
Yeah.
And he'll tell you, you know, one time your dad did this. And I know that fucking shit's true.
Yeah.
And I know when to listen to him and when not. So are there any times where you guys talk and you'll reminisce and she'll drop something on you?
Great memory. And sometimes
is it accurate, though?
It's accurate. It is. And she'll bring it out. She remembers, you know, my mother was, when we would go out to eat, she was vicious to the waiters. She would make waiters cry. She'd make chefs cry. Oh, yeah, because she was brutal. She would sit down in the restaurant and she'd be like, I want the fries lightly cooked. The fries would come out and they weren't lightly cooked. She'd go, let me ask you a question. She'd bring the waiter over. She'd go, let me ask you a question. If the chef can't make French fries, do you think he's in the right line of work? And the guy goes, okay, I'll take the fries back. She goes, no. I'm just asking you a question. If the chef cannot handle the French fry, do you think he's in the right line
of
work?
And you're sitting there as a kid.
I'm just sitting there. And he goes, well, I think, you know, he's having problems with his wife. His, you know, kid was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh
my mom's like, well, I assume the meal is free. She was vicious. She would pull up to Wendy's and she would say to the manager, it was always like, a white like woman with glasses who was in her late 60s, you know, maybe late 40s, 50s. My mom would be like, are you guys on tomorrow? You have Ariel from The Little Mermaid. That toy comes out tomorrow. And the woman's like, yeah, it comes out tomorrow. My mom's like, yeah, but it's 10:30 at night. You have it today. And the woman's like, yeah, it comes out tomorrow. My mom's like, but you have a box of it in there right now, right? The woman's like, we can't give them out till tomorrow. My mom's like, but they're here. Can you confirm that they're in the building? You're not getting it. And the woman's like, they are here. And so once that happened, my mother was like, okay, they're here. I want them. And it would be a 10-minute fight. And then at the end, some guy would walk out of Wendy's, some thin guy would walk out with just a case of fucking Ariel toys, hand them to my mother. Oh, yeah. She won the battles. Hand them to my mother. I'd be eating a bag of, 78 junior bacon cheeseburgers that she bought. So she was my father's first date with my mother. One of them, they're in a diner in Long Island. They make her food the wrong way. She walks back into the kitchen, and my father just sees like Greek waiters like staring, the chef staring. My mother goes,
walk
right back through.
Who gave me this honeydew?
She goes, I wanted fish, but I wanted it plain. I didn't want anything else on it. She goes, give it. She like threw it at the chef, and my father at that point was like, oh, this lady's crazy.
But I'm in love.
I'm in love. Yeah. You know, she's a mermaid and a bitch, and she's willing to make scenes in public places. Let's do it.
That mermaid just threw fish at me. Do you understand how absurd that is?
That mermaid doesn't like her fish
that
with sauce.
That mermaid just threw a fucking fish at me.
That's so absurd.
So she was brutal. So she's still.
So your dad knew. Yeah. Your dad knew.
Your dad knew. I mean, listen, man. I have a lot of friends that date crazy women. A lot of them. Strippers. I mean, one of my friends, his chick was on Indiana's Most Wanted.
What?
Yeah, and she was a girl, Isabel, and we met her, and she was fun. She was dancing at a bar. We met her the same night in a bar in East Meadow. She was dancing at a bar. She was dancing, and then my other friend Joe.
Just dance. Stripper or she's dancing?
It's the line is quite blurred.
Fair enough.
You know, she's not Irish step dancing. She's she's showing the goods. And then my friend Joe, who's just this 300-pound fat guy, is also dancing on the bar, doesn't even know anything's happening. The bartender comes out to me. She goes, you have to get him down. This is a dangerous situation. And he's amazing. My friend Joe is, like, amazingly not falling and, like, just like Jackie Gleason, light on his feet, dancing. And then this girl's dancing. And so my friend Ryan is like, who is this girl? And he met her. They started dating. And I still remember this because I was in the living room of this house when it happened. About 5 state troopers pulled up. They knocked on the door and they said, where's Isabel blank blank, her name? And my friend Ryan goes, she's not here. And they go, okay, well, let me explain this, how it works. We have a warrant to search these premises because we know this is where she's staying. She's on Indiana's Most Wanted. And if we come in here and we find her, we're taking you in for as an accessory. So I'm going to ask you again, where is Isabel? And Ryan just looks at him and goes, in the kitchen. And they go in.
Hurry up with my fish, Isabel. You're about to be taken out.
And they take her out. And his parents said, that night we're all drinking. We're We're having dinner. We're drinking.
Was she in her 20s, maybe?
Martinis. Yeah, we're drinking martinis. His mother was great. She used to make these big martinis, Ryan's mother. And Ryan's father, who ran a successful company, he passed away now, but he's a fucking great guy. He said, he goes, the scariest thing, Ryan, he goes, you and Tim Dillon, and you both.
They're home, too, when this happens, his parents?
They get home later.
Okay.
But they're not shocked.
Right.
They're actually kind of happy because they told him not to date her. So we're like, the most wanted, America's most wanted came and took Isabel. And they're like, yeah, of course they did. You fucking idiot. How'd she get all this money? Whose car is that? What do you think? You know, she's a con artist. And then the mother would yell at the father and go, she's dating him because he's a con artist. She'd point to her son. And they said, and I remember Ryan's dad looking at me and Ryan, he goes, you guys are both big fucking guys. If either one of you were taken up by the fucking police, you would be fucking wrecked. You would be terrified because you're soft bitches. You know, this woman, he goes, wasn't even fucking affected. She just went out like, this is what it is, like a hardened criminal. He goes, she's like a hardened criminal, son. She didn't care. There was no fear in her eyes. She was just going.
I'd be scared to death to go to prison.
Yeah, I'd be scared. Dude, I'd be scared to death.
Prison.
He goes, there's no fear in her eyes. She's a hardened criminal. And I still remember what my friend Ryan said. He's eating. He goes, but I love her. He goes, I love her. And they're
God
like,
damn it, there's other mermaids in
the
sea.
She's a hardened criminal. And it's like, so I know a lot of dudes that kind of like my dad did. You kind of like, you buy the ticket for the train ride because.
Wait, what was she wanted for? Do you know? Can you say?
Identity theft, fraud. You know,
all those good
fake
things.
Names, using fake credit. I mean, she was always, she would be one of those chicks who just show up one day and start buying shit at the bar. And we're like, all right, we don't know what you're doing, but okay. So I think she was doing shit like, she was definitely doing shit like that, you know? But I mean, she was fun. I mean, again, I hate to say it. She was a real fun hang. And I bet my mom was fun. I know
I bet she was.
I know it ends in tragedy.
Yeah.
It ends in your honeydew. I mean, this is what happens.
It's what happens.
But I bet honeydew comes from a place where it's not shit until the very end.
It's taken care of. I bet there's a lot of...
I bet someone really gives a fuck about it before it turns into this mushy shit that nobody wants. Because that's where it goes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure at some point it was fucking a mermaid with big tits. And she was fucking dating a guy in a band, and life was cool. But now, she's in a diner, and it's rough.
Throwing fish at the fucking
Throwing fish at the chef, and you know.
Whew. All right, so.
It's uplifting.
Can we talk about coming out of the closet
and
all that?
Yeah, came out
so
25.
You said you knew when you were 12. Can we go back to that?
Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I looked at him. I was like, this is a guy that's
He was a crush?
Yeah, it was a crush at 12. I was 12. He was 12. Like that. And I was like, oh, this is a good-looking guy. I feel a weird way about him that I probably shouldn't feel. But you kind of stuff it down. In high school, you start like getting more into the feelings of it. And you have these weird close friendships and all this weird shit. No.
Did you ever, in that time, did you ever, at least that you knew of, meet any other gay guys that you knew?
Yeah, probably guys in like the theater program and stuff. But like
you didn't date?
No, I wasn't dating. Like you would like.
Did you ever date girls?
Yes. I dated girls. I had sex with some girls. I dated some girls. You know, some women that love to eat. Go out with some women that love to eat. That love to go to a Peter Luger's. You know, put on a real food bag. Bottle of Chianti. Let's some lasagna. Some buffalo mozzarella. Let's do it right. Little baked ziti. Lasagna. Shrimp cocktail. Damn. There's no sex after this. Literally, we can't touch each other. We can barely fit in a cab. But I mean, we ate at the best restaurants in the world. I have girls to this day that were like, you kind of broke my heart. We ate in the best restaurants in the world. And I were like, do you remember the Dover sole? You know? Do you remember the baked clams with the bacon on? And because I loved going out. I loved getting banged up. And I loved drinking and eating with girls. And I still love going out and eating. I don't drink anymore. But, like, it's fun.
Are you clean and sober?
Clean and sober. No,
nothing. Good for you.
Nothing. But so I knew in high school you start, like, you know, you're wrestling. You're stupid. You start feeling those feelings. And then college you start, like, experimenting. Going on Craigslist. You used to have to email people to suck their dick. You'd be like, hello.
Can we talk about all this?
Sure, absolutely.
Right, so at 12, you realize.
Yeah.
Or you accept it personally that you're gay.
You start to feel.
Okay, you start to feel.
I wouldn't say
nothing
I accepted
prior to
it
that.
At 12.
nothing for girls or boys prior to that?
No, not really. Okay. I was, no.
And then did your parents ever know?
They might have had suspicions. I mean, I was an actor. They had me in dance classes. I was in musical theater. I mean, you know, probably they had a suspicion. Maybe.
So you get into high school. You date girls for a little bit.
Date girls.
How do you meet boys, and when do you go on your first, like, you say Craigslist and all that?
But I think I was like 19.
Okay.
And it was like the...
College or...
Yeah, college, summer going into whatever. And I just email a guy on Craigslist, and I think he emailed me back and...
Complete stranger.
Yeah, it was just like, I think I answered an ad that said, like, firefighter wants to get sucked or something. those were the days of Craigslist.
I got a hose, bro.
And he was not a firefighter, this guy. He was in the firefighter program. He was not even it was after 9/11. He was trying to do the right thing. And he, so I was at work, and like your work email would like be like, one email that would come through would be like, you know, we have, you know, fourth quarter is in, everyone did great. Cake in the conference room for Sheila's birthday. Firefighter wants to get sucked. Annette from payroll needs your social. So you'd have to...
payroll needs your social.
So you'd have to click on the email and you'd respond.
From a work email, you're doing that?
Yeah, from a work email. And then I responded and he responded. He's like, come to Brooklyn. I came to Brooklyn. Most of the email was like threats. Where he's like, I'm not gay. No, but don't tell anyone. All this stuff. And I'm like, okay, neither am I. I get it. And I met him in Brooklyn, and we got in the car. And
how old's he?
24.
All right, so right around your age, right?
23.
Were you 20 couple?
Yeah. Beefy Italian guy, muscular, like good, like. And then he said to me, he goes,
you get in his car, he said.
No, my car. Oh, my grandmother's Ford Focus. It's hot. This is a hot story. This is a hot
dude, I got pre-cum right now.
This is a sexual event. This is very hot. Keep it in your pants. So we're in a Ford Focus. Maybe we're smoking weed. Maybe we're not. I don't remember. I think we are. I'm pretty sure we are. Why wouldn't we be?
Sure.
I'm like, when did you find out you were into this stuff? He's like, when I went to Italy. I was like, what? He's like, I figured out that I like sucking and being sucked in Italy. I'm like, well, that's an odd thing. It's an odd trip. What happened, you know? And he's like, we can't do it in my house because my fucking grandmother's there. Like, he's angry. I'm like, yeah, no, all right. So we get to this motel, the Linden Motel in Brooklyn, pay by the hour. Not great with decor. And we knock
But like a step up from the crack houses?
No.
Same smoking blankets and shit.
It's a step. If it's a step up, it's a half step.
You were comfortable there, though.
I was fine. And he said to me, we go in and he says, this Indian guy behind the glass, and he says to the guy, he goes, listen, we're renting a room for an hour. I want to let you know something. We're not smoking crack in there. And I'm like, what? And then this guy was like crazy. And I said to him, I'm like, why'd you tell him that? And he's like, God forbid anybody that I know or like my grandmother comes here, I don't want them to think I'm smoking crack. And I'm like, if they come here, that's the best thing they could think about what we're doing. That's the best. I think we should buy crack right now and light it up in the room as a cover story. I don't understand what. You know, so then I think we just we sucked each other off in the thing, and then we went and had nuggets.
Nuggets. You
and then
Right
before I put my mouth on his dick, he said to me, he's like, I want to tell you one fucking thing. I had my hand on his dick and it was almost in my mouth, and he goes, it was literally in my mouth. Tip of it was in my mouth. He goes, I'm not gay. And I took the tip of his dick out of my mouth and go, no, I know.
Me either.
I was like, yeah, no, I get it. And then I just stuck them off. And then he said to me, he's like, afterwards, he goes, I'll suck you off if you buy me nuggets at Wendy's. And so he did. And then
like, my mom's got a connection.
We went
Wendy's,
to have nuggets
worry.
At Wendy's. And
some aerial toys, too. But.
Yeah. And then we were just sitting there trying to cover up, you know, cock breath with nuggets in a parking lot. And now it's better for the kids. Now it's all support groups and concerts, and you bring your boyfriend to the house, and what fun is that? Your parents love you. They care about you. You don't spend any time getting coked out, sucking someone off in a hotel room, eating, you know, processed chicken. It's a different world, and good. It's a better world. Kids now, it's much better, but...
So do you keep that up for a while until you finally come out at 25?
Yeah, I keep that up till 25.
And you don't try to meet a guy and date or anything like that? You're doing the Craigslist thing
or
the
personals?
Yeah, it's
really just hookups, I'm trying to make money. I'm still drunk.
Repeat hookups or one and done?
Yeah, sometimes repeat. Sometimes, it's really
not
just,
was everybody like that, by the way? Or there,
I don't know.
A lot of that angry, I'm not gay?
No, a lot of those guys that I'm with are yet.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's a two-time hookup, three-time hookup, but it kind of fizzles. It's kind of like, okay, on to the next thing, on to the next thing, on to the next thing. These guys are all damaged. I can't really connect with them. It's hard for me to connect with myself. You got to realize I am still.
Oh, we've heard where you come from.
You know where I'm coming from. I am drinking. I'm smoking weed every day. I'm still taking pills. I'm still very.
So all that's still going
on. That's all okay. Still going on. I've kind of calmed down with the coke because I'm broke. But other than that, it's like still a problem. And then at 25, and I've told this story like a few different times, I told it on Jay's thing, I'd get to be a juror on a murder trial in Long Island. Okay. It's this big murder trial, murder, torture, rape. And I'm sitting there every day and I'm getting this idea that I'm every day in a juror trial, a murder trial is all about mortality. It's like somebody's life is over and somebody's life is going to end when you send them to jail, which this guy went to jail. He was guilty. So I'm hearing that every day, and I'm still drinking, and I'm still doing these things, and I realize I'm living the wrong life. Like, I'm living this life that isn't real. It's not me. I'm lying about my sexuality. I'm doing this job I don't love. I don't really want to be a salesperson. I'm trying to bury all of my fears with booze and with money and all this shit. I got to do something else. I got to come clean, and I remember that when I was a kid, I loved being on stage. I was like, I really liked being an actor. I hated all the bullshit that came with it. And I hated that, you know, but when I was on stage, that moment being on stage in front of people singing or acting or doing whatever, I felt like I belonged there. And I felt like that was a place that I should be. And that was what took me back to comedy eventually.
So that drug trial not only had you thinking about.
Was murder trial.
I mean, murder trial. Yeah. I say that because I was on a 5-week drug trial.
Interesting.
It was nuts.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, it was nuts?
It was crazy.
Was it murder, torture, rape?
It was not murder, torture,
okay,
rape.
Thank you.
No, it wasn't.
Thank you.
But it was pretty crazy, but it was not that crazy.
All right.
Would
the feds give a guy some coke and they pull him over a block later and go, I can't believe he's got coke.
How did this happen? This was a these two gay guys have crack in a hotel.
Is that what it was?
No.
Oh,
no. These guys
I was like, oh,
were,
it was good.
These
I
guys
apologize.
Automatic weapons.
Oh, okay.
But
that is cool.
It was a million in cash, a million in drugs, weapons, at a Jack in the Box, all done in a parking lot at a Jack in the Box, and then phone taps. Wiretaps. They would just keep it like they had photos of everything. There's fucking like guns in the washer.
Yeah.
Stacks of cash in the dryer.
Yeah.
You know, and just bundles of pounds of shit in the
great.
And like anytime I go buy a Jack in a Box, I look, and if I see a minivan in the parking lot, I'm like, that could be the beginning of $1 million drug deal right
That's
there.
So
like it blew my mind.
Yeah.
But so this whole trial's got you thinking about your life. It's got you thinking about coming to basically an honest decision with yourself about your sexuality and comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God for that fucking trial. No, not to the what happened.
No,
in
someone,
it, but I'm
someone,
saying.
Listen, someone died so I could live.
that's not what I'm trying to say.
No, it is. And it's
but
listen,
that's
hey,
a hell
I'm
of
sorry.
A thing to put that into perspective for you.
I bet that bitch wasn't funny who got knifed. Kidding. God love her. And the. I put the guy in jail. What do you want me? You know, I put the guy in jail.
We did too.
He was it was bad, man. It was bad. And I got to the age where something also affected me besides the trial. My friend, when he dropped me off, was like, okay, man, have fun. And I went into this thing and I wanted to get on it. And I like auditioned for it. Like I had all the right answers. Like the, you know, they were like, your license has been suspended. You must hate the cops. I'm like, no, I'm irresponsible. I hate myself. The prosecutor was like, he's good. Defense attorney's like, murder, torture, rape. How could you be impartial? I'm like, they're just words. They're just what, you know? And then I realized, like, I got back in my friend's car and he's like, did you get it? And I'm like, yeah, I got it. And he's like, I knew you'd get it. And I'm like, how sick am I? I'm still auditioning. And then now it's for a murder trial. Like, this is how crazy, this is how deep the mania is. And I'm so unhappy in my life that I want, and even a murder trial, I want anything to get. I went back to my sales office. My manager's like, you couldn't get out of jury duty? What kind of salesman can't get out of fucking jury duty? And I was just at a point in my life where I'm like, if this is what I need, if this is a nice change of pace, hearing about somebody who was stabbed so many times, the coroner can't, you know, they stop the wound count after a certain.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, if this is the moment, like, I was like, oh, I'm in a bad place that I want out of my life so much and I'm willing to sit through a murder trial.
And listen in detail to
that. Because it is, I hate to say it, it is interesting stuff. That's why every fucking murder podcast kills it. That's why you have shows
all
like
Law
and Order
and shit.
All the
Ted Bundy documentary.
But
it's
none
going
of that,
nuts
I can't
now.
Do any of that anymore. Yeah. After sitting through the real thing, the reality is the experience that I had with real murder and real death, I don't really, I don't nerd out. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with people who do, but because I went through the real thing, I saw people's family, I saw people's mothers and fathers, and I went through that. I personally am just like, oh, I had that experience up close, and I just don't, I would rather, like, you know, watch a documentary on something else, like a pedophile cult, you know, or something that's more, that's lighter.
So, lighter. Now that you're
out. I was with my friend last night, we're watching like crazy stuff. YouTube is just, if you make a certain type of friend and you have YouTube, and everyone does, you have YouTube, but you have a computer. If you share a certain sensibility, you just go on YouTube and it's like, people talk about, oh, the dark web, this and that. Dude, YouTube's the worst thing in the world. There is nothing worse than YouTube. And I'm talking, and this is from someone who's seen murder, drug addiction, mental illness, financial collapse. YouTube is going to fucking, it's going to make all of that shit look like springtime in Central Park.
Yeah.
Because there's some real crazy shit on there.
So you come out. Now, how's the conversation go with mom and dad?
Dad, I told first. He was like, okay. He's like, yeah, this is fine. He didn't really care. I was 25.
Did he say anything like I had a suspicion?
No. He's like, I didn't know, but he's like, okay.
That's good.
Regret, you know, at that point in his life, he's like, I don't have to work more hours, right? I'm like, no, this doesn't affect,
doesn't affect your work week.
I can still golf? Yeah. Can I still be relatively unsupportive of you? I would hope. Yes.
Don't ever change.
And then, you know, my mom was kind of a little bit more, of course, all about her. She's like, I kind of wanted grandchildren. And I'm like, you need to work on you. I don't know that, you know.
Grandchildren.
You're in an institution where your day is planned for you. What, did you want me to have some kids so you could kidnap them, you crazy bitch? Tell them about the FBI that's been following you? Get back in the cell. Guard, we're done.
My God. Get back in the tank. They should let your mom swim around that fucking mental institution, goddammit. Water just, it makes everything so much better.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. It's amazing shit.
Speaking of amazing, Jesus Christ, you're amazing, man. This has been something else.
It's been, you know, it's uplifting.
So now, are you dating anyone? Are you seeing anyone?
I'm not seeing anyone right now.
Have you ever found love?
I don't know that I found like a solid love where I'm like, I think love, you got to be willing to throw it all away. That to me is really what love is, where you're like,
compromise,
dude,
I'm
willing to throw it all away for this one person. I've not found that yet. I found people I've really liked, but you know, my career is a thing. I really like being able to work right now and trying to build something that
I like.
Are
you open to that? Are you open to
it? Yeah, I'm open to finding it now, more so than I was years ago. When I first started comedy, I was like really like with the intensity of an addict, like let's get up, let's do sets. I got to get this and that. I got to, you know, but now I'm open to finding that. But that to me is real, you know, the love that you want to find where you're like, fuck it, this person just is amazing. So that, not yet. But, you know, we'll see.
But you're open to it.
Sure.
No, you don't see yourself necessarily being a single dude the rest of your life.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm getting to the point in my career where I've done some stuff and I'm starting to realize the limits of this. Not the limits, like obviously you can do amazing things with this business, but you need to build out a more complete life. And I'm realizing that, I think, in the last year or two, because I've done some of the things I've wanted to do. I've, you know, taped the specials. I've done some podcasts. I've had conversations with people that I respect in the business. And, like, I'm taken seriously in a group of people that I respect and like. And I've done some really cool. I've been able to headline on the road and, like, be the guy that goes into a club and make everyone laugh for a whole weekend. Everybody, you know, so doing all that stuff, I've realized like that's all great, but it's not enough. So you need to build out those other parts of your life.
Well, I think you're doing a great job at that, dude. Yeah. Congrats to you. Well, That's a hell of an upbringing, man. My God.
It's fun stuff.
Thank you, dude. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been fan. I would love you to come back anytime you want, brother.
No, this was great. This was very fun. It's good to go through it all again.
It's therapy, brother.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Will you, one more time, promote anything you'd like,
TimDillonComedy.com for any live dates. Tim Dillon is Going to Hell is the podcast. We go into some fun, dark areas. We have some really funny comics on. We have investigative journalists on. We've had a CIA agent on. We've had all kinds of crazy stuff, really cool episodes if you're into that shit. Tim J. Dillon, D-I-L-L-O-N on Instagram and Twitter. I try to promote stuff I'm doing on there. And TimDillonComedy.com if you want to see me, if I'm, you know, at a club in your town or whatever. Come on down and let's fucking, let's talk about mermaids.
Live. Yeah, let's go see Tim live. Thank you again
so much.
I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next Wednesday.